Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call this April 2nd meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. Ooh, it's a good day. Representative Hewitt, have you had a chance to review the minutes from our April 1st meeting?
Mr. Chair, I have, and so moved.
All right, thank you very much. Any discussion to the Hewitt Amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the minutes of the April 1st meeting, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, we introduced the proposed education finance omnibus bill for this session. House File 2400 yesterday began the process of the community testimony reflecting on the bill. We are continuing that today. We have a long list of people who have signed up. As was announced yesterday and was reinforced with each of these individuals when they signed up, we're, in order to accommodate as many people as possible, we are holding to a two-minute limit for each testifier. With that, let's begin. Mr. Corte, Assistant Commissioner Corte, is first up. On deck is Shannon Mitchell from Educators for Excellence. Commissioner Corte, welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Darren Corte. I'm an assistant commissioner at MDE. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill, and thank you for your leadership in constructing a bill that contains a significant and equitable investment in Minnesota students. You'll see in your packets there's a letter from Commissioner Ricker as well that you may want to take a look at, but just generally we really want to thank you for including most of the provisions that were in the governor's education policy and budget bills. I'm glad that we're on the same page when it comes to looking at how to close and address the special education cross-subsidy, as well as taking a look at how we can ensure that parents and children have access to high-quality voluntary pre-kindergarten. We also want to thank you for adopting the governor's agency operating budget recommendation that keeps MDE whole so we can continue to provide services and technical assistance to our district's educators, parents, and families. This is an impressive package of proposals, but we'd just like to point out three items that we hope we can continue to work with you on as the bills progress through the process. First, we really appreciate the intent behind creating the Pupil Transportation Working Group. We think that's definitely an issue that needs to be addressed, but we would like to see it addressed within the larger school finance task force that has been discussed, just because there's a lot of interplay between pupil transportation and other education funding formulas. We think that that conversation is best had in that broader context of the school finance working task force. The bill also does not include a proposal that was in the governor's budget that would create a grant administration account at MDE. Other agencies have accounts like this. As you know, MDE administers a number of grants that are set forth by the legislature that's been increasing in the last number of years. Right now, we're at about $47 million worth of grants that we administer without any additional funding. And that's there's another $8 million in this bill that would increase that. And while we appreciate that there is administrative funding attached to some of these things, having a grant administration account will really ease the efficiency with which we can administer these and save time for our staff when they're administering these accounts. And lastly, the bill does not include the proposal to move Pelsby and BOSA back into the general fund. They have some concerns that starting with fiscal 20, they would be moved to a special revenue account and whether or not they would be bringing in sufficient revenue to maintain their operations, and also whether or not they would run into cash flow issues because of when their funding comes in. So again, happy to work with you on those issues as we move forward. The commissioner thanks you for this robust proposal and would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Corte. Ms. Mitchell and Katie Smith is on deck. I would ask if you know that you are on deck to please take a seat in the what do did we
gallery.
Call that gallery
bullpen
bullpen the bullpen thank you Ms. Sunderland just to ease transitions please you're Ms. Mitchell
no
oh okay moving on Ms. Smith
yes
Sure. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chairman and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of ECFE today. My name is Katie Smith. I am a licensed parent educator, a job I love so much I'm having a difficult time retiring from it. I spent 29 years in Winona, one in Robbinsdale, and this year in South Washington County. I am the 2011 Minnesota Teacher of the Year. It is spring.
Wonderful.
And as many of you know, parent educators harvest hope for Minnesota's newest parents. In newborn home visits with parents and their babies, parent educators offer hope and reassurances that the baby they are falling in love with is falling in love with them too. School readiness begins right here. In classes with parents in schools all over our state, parent educators connect parents to other parents and to rich, meaningful curriculum that strengthens the parent-child relationship and helps parents prepare their children for school and life. We teach them about child development, family development, and how to take care of themselves while helping them navigate any bumps along the way. In-home visits, where trauma, addiction, depression, and hopelessness are often bigger than a parent's desire to connect to their own children, parent educators are often the one trusting relationship that helps parents get the desperate help they need to take care of themselves so that they can take care of their own children. Parent educators hold a hopeful vision for families until a parent is able to cultivate that hope on their own. When there is reason to, parent educators are uniquely qualified to connect families to early childhood special education services. I have seen early intervention bring hope to families' lives. Parent educators strengthen the capacity of the network of professional support to provide a mixed delivery of multi-generational services for parents and children. This thing we do is no small thing. This uniquely Minnesotan thing makes Minnesota a better place to raise a family. Everywhere I go across the state, parents and legislators tell me they do not know what they would have done without ECFE. I am one of those parents. Our work is complex, engaging, and hopeful. Our work is enhanced by your work this session, too. Support public pre-K and parent education programs to employ licensed teachers. It matters. We also support the provision to include our fully licensed ECFE and ABE teachers in the continuing contract schedule, no matter where you teach in our state. Support the proposals to provide adequate funding for public schools and students who have experienced trauma. Again, thank you so much for this opportunity to speak with you today and for your dedication to Minnesota public schools. I am hopeful.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Honor to have a Teacher of the Year before us. Thank you very much. Next up is Ms. Ford. Oh, and Dennis. Okay. And then Mary Hartnett. Thank you very much. Ms. Ford, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Sarah Ford. I'm an education issues specialist and policy specialist at Education Minnesota. I'm here to support the changes to the teacher licensure law and also the pre-K licensure requirement contained in this omnibus bill. I will focus on the research question of whether or not a teaching license leads to better outcomes for our students. That question, does a license help, made sense when having a license meant having pre-service training, and major peer-reviewed studies found over and over again that did. But over the past 20 years, many states, including our own, have so reduced requirements for licensure that they now license people without any content-specific or pedagogical training to teach. Having a teaching license in a particular field now means something entirely different from one state to another. So for researchers, using that as the benchmark for a control group in a study doesn't make any sense. More recent studies have therefore stopped asking the question based simply on licensure status and have instead focused on what types of teacher preparation lead to better outcomes for students. We've prepared a summary of some of the research connecting higher student outcomes to robust pre-service training in both content and pedagogy. That handout is in your packet. In short, content and content-specific pedagogy are interrelated and highly complex, and they are critical for effective teaching. Teachers must know both what it is they teach and how to approach appropriately teach that content to highly diverse groups of students. Scholars have documented the harm done to students of color when states rush to lower the bar for teacher licensure. Laura Gold, for example, of UC Berkeley, examined the distribution of teachers hired without teacher preparation in California and confirmed what others had already found. These teachers tend to be concentrated in schools with low standardized test scores, high percentages of students of color and English language learners, and high percentages of students with free or reduced price lunch. These students, who most need fully trained teachers, are the students who are least likely to get them. Because of this research, is our belief both that pre-K teachers in Minnesota should be licensed and that obtaining a Minnesota teaching license should require pre-service training in content and pedagogy. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. Mr. Is it Drawn?
Yes.
Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Dabney, members of the committee. My name is Dennis Strawn, and I'm a social studies teacher at Apple Valley High School. I'm one of the many educators across the state who are concerned about the current teacher-tiered licensing system. People who aren't directly in the classroom fail to see the effect of educators of color that educators of color have on students who look like them. Anyone who knows me understands this topic is near to my heart. The population of racially diverse students is growing throughout the state, and we need more educators with formal training in culturally responsive teaching. Some say the current licensure law will attract much-needed teachers of color to the profession but not requiring them to go through teacher preparation training. But using that as an excuse to lower standards is unacceptable and insulting. We hold high expectations for students in the classroom, and we should also expect the same in terms of our practice. Lowering the licensing standards sends the message that teachers of color are not capable of meeting the standards to begin with, and that's just not true. By lowering the standards to increase the number of teachers of color, you're creating the conditions for teacher turnover to get even worse, and teachers of color leave at a rate of 24% higher than white teachers. Here's some truth, though. Educators don't get enough respect. We need to remove the financial barriers to getting a teaching degree, address the teacher pay gap, provide adequate school support staff, give educators a voice when important decisions are being made, provide mentors and on-the-job training, fund the initiatives outlined by the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. The revisions in this bill do not dismantle the current law, nor do they prohibit any teacher of color from teaching next year. However, the bill does increase transparency by asking administrators to publicly report the number of teachers in each tier in their building. Minnesota's run an experiment on its students to see how little teacher training the state can require before it affects educational outcomes. This is happening right now. If this experiment doesn't work, or I should say when this experiment doesn't work, many students will miss out on a year of learning they won't get back. Why would you wait to gather data about how it's going or to provide some guardrails for parents who don't know that all teachers are no longer trained equally? This bill is the responsible thing to do today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Drawn. Ms. Hartnett, after that, Mr. Sellers. Ms. Hartnett, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mary Hartnett, Executive Director, Commission of Deaf, Blind, and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I want to thank you for all of the provisions that provide supports for children who are deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing. The increase in the special ed subsidy is very welcome, particularly for our deafblind students and hard of hearing students. We really appreciate that. The provision for Metro Deaf School, who they thought 4 years ago would be able to place children who were birth to three so they could stimulate language acquisition, were prevented from doing that up until the fix that is in this bill, so we're really thankful for that. There's a provision or a clause that was included that we are afraid would prevent a payment for the 18 children that are already covered for district-placed children. This fixes open enrollment, which is parent choice to place the children in the district. So I believe there'll be an amendment that's coming up to fix that, and we're very thankful and we'll hope that that would be accepted by this committee. And thankful for the funding for the academies for the deaf and blind, and including the provision for newborn screening. So thank you and appreciate all of the work of this committee.
Record time, much appreciated. Mr. Sellers, and after that, Jessica Webster, and then Cindy Crist. Mr. Sellers, welcome to the committee.
And good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Daniel Sellers. I serve as Executive Director of Ed Allies, a statewide education advocacy nonprofit, and I start by saying thank you for your work on this bill. I testify today with concerns about the proposed changes to teacher licensure in Article 3. The data is clear. The licensure provisions in this bill could pose serious negative consequences to educators of color currently teaching in Minnesota classrooms. It cuts off existing pathways to permanent licensure for 23% of Minnesota's current teachers of color because they currently hold Tier 1 or Tier 2 licenses. To my knowledge, the licensure provisions are the only provisions in this bill which the Star Tribune editorial board has come out against. Minneapolis Public Schools and the Northside Achievement Zone have shared concerns about the licensure provisions. We have heard concerns from the Coalition of Asian American Leaders and other community partners in St. Paul. In Greater Minnesota, we have heard concerns about the licensure provision from the Lakes Country Service Cooperative. We have heard concerns from Dr. Mira Perry Reed, superintendent of Hopkins School District, and from HR professionals representing other suburban school districts. We have heard concerns from Minnesota Business Partnership and from even from Way to Grow, which represents many of our state's most underserved, littlest learners. Most importantly, we have heard concerns from dozens of educators of color themselves who are terrified about the impact these provisions will have on their ability to remain in the classroom beyond next year, positively impacting students. I ask that you think about the educators of color who will be impacted by the language in this bill. I cannot think of any other provisions in this bill which have drawn such significant concerns from so many stakeholders. The licensure provisions will make it harder for schools to attract, recruit, and retain talented educators, and specifically teachers of color. Lastly, I have a letter here signed by a diverse group of organizations, including schools, education associations, service providers, community groups, and advocates, opposing the licensure provisions, and I would ask that the letter be distributed to members. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sellers, Ms. Webster, Ms. Christ on deck, followed by Ms. Tinney. Ms. Webster, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid, and I just wanted to briefly say thank you and support the lunch shaming provisions that are included here and hope that we can tighten that up finally this year. And also, we appreciate the investments in breakfast. Thank you.
Ooh, the record time standard just got higher.
So Ms. I should take the rest of her time.
I didn't say that, Ms. Chris. Nice try, though.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Cindy Crisp with MACTI. The 31 college and university members of the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education wish to express our support for House File 2400. First, we support provisions designed to address the problems facing districts as they seek qualified teachers to their classrooms. We know from data on the number of individuals holding valid licenses compared to the number of teaching positions that the problem is less one of getting enough individuals licensed than it is of keeping them in the classroom. We need to make teaching a more desirable profession in which individuals are mentored in their early years, adequately compensated, provided a supportive work environment, and given the respect they deserve for the critical work they do. However, there are not enough teachers of color to reflect the diversity of students in our classrooms. We all know that. We support the provisions in this bill that address recruitment, preparation, and retention of a more diverse teaching force, although we would urge you to consider adding funding to help student teachers complete that essential step in their preparation. It doesn't do a lot of good to recruit them into our programs if we can't help them stay there through licensure. Regarding licensure, we respectfully disagree with those who have suggested that we should allow more time for the current tiered licensure structure to work. There's a large body of research, Ms. Ford alluded to it, demonstrating the positive impact on student learning of being taught by fully prepared, high-quality teachers. We believe that 8 years of teaching under Tier 1 and 2 licenses should be sufficient for any individual to complete a preparation program from the growing array of approved providers. And this is no less true for teachers of color than any of their colleagues. Finally, we strongly support the removal of lines 110.15 to 110.18, ensuring that a Tier 3 license reflects successful completion of all of the requirements and standards laid out in statute and rule, and the option offered on lines 111.23 to 111.25 for a teacher to attain a Tier 4 license when a district verifies a candidate's skills in reading, writing, and mathematics. If we can trust districts' judgment in the issuance of Tier 1 and 2 licenses, surely we can trust them to determine adequate basic skills for more experienced Tier 3 teachers. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Christ. Ms. Tinney, followed by Ms. Tardy, and then Ms. Mino, if I have that right. Ms. Tinney, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Beverly Tinney. I am a special education paraeducator in the Mounds View School District and a member of SEIU Local 284. We know that school districts struggle to keep up with mandated costs of educating students with special needs. We also know that appropriately supporting students with special needs is critical for their development and future success. When Minnesota and the federal government don't pay their fair share of the cost of special education, local school districts have to step up and make up the difference. Everyone is asked to do more with less, and that's just not sustainable. I would like to thank the chair for including a significant increase in the special education funding in this bill. I would also like to thank the chair for a para training provision. Too often in schools across Minnesota, para educators are asked to learn on the job how to support our most vulnerable students. This bill would allow paras to meet with IEP teams to learn about our students' unique and individual needs before the beginning of the school year. IEPs are most effective when paras working with a student know the goals, the plan's goals, and objectives. This small change would make a big difference in both our students' lives and in our lives. To best serve our students as we work to meet a wider range of student needs, we need the opportunities for training, which this bill would provide. We need training in de-escalation strategies. I work with students who sometimes hit, kick, bite, spit, and throw things. We need training on a host of other issues also, such as trauma and multicultural issues. We love our job, we love our students, and we want to do the best for them. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Tardy, followed by Ms. Mino. She's not here yet. Okay. Ms. Mino, and then followed by Mr. Berenger. Ms. Mino, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Rebecca Mino, and I work on children's programs and policy at Second Harvest Heartland. Mr. Chair and committee members, I want to first thank you for your support and including Breakfast After the Bell bill in your omnibus bill. 1 in 8 Minnesota kids is at risk of hunger and the harmful mental and physical stress that it causes. It impairs learning and can have lifelong consequences. School breakfast is an important tool to help ensure students have access to the healthy food they need to succeed in school. Research shows that eating school breakfast improves test scores, grades, and attendance. However, we know that students hesitate to eat school breakfast, even if they're hungry, because there's a perception that only the low-income kids eat breakfast at school. Even kids that do want to eat breakfast at school often can't, because breakfast is usually served before the start of the school day, and their can't gets to school early enough to eat it. The result is eligible kids missing out on an important support for their developing brains and bodies. Breakfast After the Bell would remove this stigma, increase access, and ensure all students are fed. This legislation would help Minnesota catch up with the rest of the country by supporting schools to build breakfast programs that use innovative and tested ways of serving breakfast after the bell to reach more students in schools that already have many kids who qualify for free and reduced lunch. I have seen firsthand working in schools the positive impacts that Breakfast After the Bell can have on students and school communities. This approach is a long-term investment in reducing healthcare costs and growing a long-term healthy workforce and vibrant economy. Thank you again for your support and the opportunity to join you today on a common sense proposal that ensures our kids have the food they need to develop healthy brains and bodies.
Thank you, Ms. Mino. Mr. Berenger, followed by Ms. Dennison-Kanin, and then Mr. Walseth. Mr. Berenger, welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you very much, Chair Dabney and members of the committee. I am Ken Berenger. I'm executive director of the Metropolitan Library Service Agency. I am here on behalf of my member counties, the Minnesota Library Association, Council of Regional Library System Administrators. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I want to thank you for the support for regional public library services found in this bill. All 12 of the regional public library system boards in the state of Minnesota have approved a resolution approving the formula changes in this bill at the funding level that is included in this amendment. State support for regional public library systems falls upon a strong local city-county effort, and it finds vibrant use patterns in every portion of the state. Local governments, including those in my area, support this effort, and their residents rely upon and benefit from services provided through this state funding. Regional library basic system support helps ensure intra-regional cooperation for and services to residents throughout the entire state and to promote those services. Regional library basic system support formula change as proposed here will help stabilize the annual distributions to the 12 regional public library systems. This will permit them to plan their services with more consistency and certainty on a year-to-year basis. Using slightly older population and tax data will allow the systems to be confident about state resources as they plan their budgets with their member cities and counties. These typically, state numbers typically do not come out until fall, and the budget process for member library systems begins in the early spring and summer as they work with cities and counties. Finally, regional library telecommunication aid has historically helped regional public libraries and other public libraries in the state provide internet access, remote services, online resources, and other electronic resources to their users. While telecom costs are flattening, the cost of both network system protection and end-user data security in the current environment are increasing. The proposed language changes in the amendment will strengthen library network support expenditures in these areas. Again, I want to thank you for your inclusion of the initiatives for regional public libraries in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Dennison-Kaneen. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Carrie Dennison-Kaneen, and I'm the executive director with Ignite After School. I'd like to thank you so much for your work on this bill and for investing in both our schools and in the community partnerships that help to support our schools and make them successful. Specifically, I'd like to thank you for investing in the After School Community Learning Grant bill, and particularly note that this investment will really help to bring after school opportunities to approximately 4,000 students across the state who would not otherwise have them through what we estimate to be between 14 and 16 grants. These are young people who would not otherwise have access and who will build relationships with caring adults and also build skills through opportunities they wouldn't have, like STEM, college and career access, arts, and health and fitness activities. And these investments will also help to ensure that these programs are high quality. And when they're high quality, we know that they're more likely to achieve outcomes, like young people doing better in school, being more engaged in the classroom, getting better grades, and graduating on time. So I want to thank you for this investment, and I look forward to continuing to work with the committee to ensure all young people have these transformative experiences. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dennison-Kaneen. Mr. Walseth, after that, Ms. Christensen and Ms. Sylvester.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Sam Walseth, here today represent both the Minnesota Rural Education Association and the Minnesota Service Cooperatives. Mr. Chair, thank you for this bill. Rural schools either struggle to survive or thrive depending on the level of financial support from the state. Rural districts struggle to levy dollars to keep up with inflationary costs and the special education cross subsidy. House File 2400 as amended with its investment in 3 and 2 on the formula, special education funding, and many other supports would go a long way to helping rural education refrain from levy increases and will keep in place quality programs for students. Mr. Chair, in addition to the big ticket items in the bill, I want to thank you for including several other policy and funding items that help make rural education work. As you're aware, we do a lot of business through cooperatives in Greater Minnesota, and you've included several pieces that might not make headline news but are truly important to us. Those items include Safe Schools revenue for cooperatives serving kids, mental health innovation grants, codifying the Rural CTE Consortia, Representative Norna's bill to extend the funding for the Northwest and statewide concurrent enrollment partnerships, Representative Poston's bill to add the service cooperatives to the Joint Powers Authority, Representative Backer's bill to allow the Breckenridge School District to enter into a PSEO agreement with the North Dakota State College of Science, and last but not least, Representative Marquardt's bill to expand options for rural schools to cover deferred maintenance costs for their cooperative facilities. Lastly, I do need to register our continued concern with the proposed changes to the licensure system. We think there are more pragmatic solutions to some of the issues raised by proponents of the bill. Tier 1 would be better resolved with the amendment that was offered during the Senate hearing on this bill. We'd encourage you to take a look at that. We do think there is some room to negotiate on Tier 3. However, removing the master's degree permission in Tier 2 and equating Tier 1 and 2 with a teacher on discipline are non-starters for us. But, Mr. Chair, with that, we really appreciate the work you've done to date in this bill and look forward to helping you pass it into law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walseth. Ms. Christensen, followed by Ms. Sylvester, followed by Ms. Abdul. Ms. Christensen.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Dabney and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Maren Christensen-Hofer. I'm a disability advocate. I run a parent support group, and most importantly, I'm the mother of an autistic child. And I'm here today on behalf of the Coalition for Children with Disabilities, which is a nonpartisan statewide group that includes the PACER Center, the ARC Minnesota, Autism Society of Minnesota, the Minnesota Brain Injury Alliance, the Epilepsy Foundation, the Prader-Willi Syndrome Association, and the PROOF Alliance. And these groups have all come together toward the shared goal of ensuring that all children have access to a free and appropriate education. We appreciate and support the following items in this bill. We support the non-exclusionary disciplinary practices language, which provides alternatives to suspension and expulsion. We support the paid training for paraprofessionals. We support the mental health grants, and we support the increased funding for special education. So thank you for your work on those efforts. The coalition remains opposed to the language around eliminating short-term objectives in the bill. And while we believe that the current language is an improvement over past efforts to repeal short-term objectives altogether, we're still concerned that in its current form, this language may result in parents foregoing their right to short-term objectives without truly understanding the ramifications of that, and even when it might be adverse to their child's interest. As we've discussed in previous testimony throughout the session, short-term objectives serve several important functions. They often describe how the long-term objective is going to be met, what steps are to be taken to get to bring the child from point A to point B. They provide an opportunity to check in. A parent does not want to have to wait 12 months before they find out that their child is not on track. And conversely, they don't want to have to wait 12 months to find out that the child has reached their goal and a new goal is in order. Short-term objectives are often written in a much more transparent and parent-friendly way. We've discussed in previous testimony that we have a problem with an information imbalance between families and school districts, and that's particularly evident in our diverse communities. We're concerned that this proposal has the potential to further tip the scales away from families. As the session progresses, we look forward to working with you and to ensure that all Minnesota children have the access to the high-quality education they deserve. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Ms. Sylvester, followed by Ms. Abdul. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Trinicia Sylvester. Good morning. Well, hi, Chair and members of the committee. I am reading from a script, but if time permits, if you all will be opening to allow me to talk about my journey as a parent advocate at the end, just let me know. Once again, for the record, my name is Trinicia Sylvester. I'm a mother and a member of the Many Minds Coalition. The Many Minds Coalition is a broad coalition of over 100 statewide organizations, including foundations, nonprofits, advocacy groups, all united in prioritizing Minnesota's youngest children as the most important investment for a stronger Minnesota. The Many Minds agenda is supported by parents like myself, early childhood care centers, education leaders, teachers, business leaders, and community members united in making access to high-quality early care and education possible for every child in Minnesota. In this bill, Many Minds supports the expansion of scholarships for children from birth 0 to 3, the Early Learning Special Revenue Fund, the elimination of Pathways to Scholarship Cap, the funding for Parent Aware, the Kindergarten Interest Assessment Initiative, and the increase for early learning scholarships. Many Minds opposes any elimination of new scholarships for four-year-olds that are not in priority categories, restricting scholarship access to four-year-olds that otherwise meet the income eligibility requirement, has the potential to set back in terms of kindergarten readiness, especially considering the current shortages of early childhood and pre-kindergarten programs across Minnesota. My children, Danae and Jameer, both received the Early Learning Scholarship. The scholarships allowed me to further my career as well as take on my career aspirations through education they were receiving high-quality early childhood care and education. Because my children had access to early quality education, they are now thriving. as the legislative continues session, I hope you will prioritize any additional money for early childhood learning scholarships. There are still 33,000 Minnesota children that lack access to high quality and early childhood education.
Thank you, Ms. Sylvester.
If you could just give me a minute.
Ms. Sylvester, we're limiting everyone to 2 minutes, and you're already beyond that.
Okay.
And so we wanted to give you time to finish.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Feel free to grab legislators as we leave the room. Lots of people do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Abdul?
No, I'm Susan. I'm a parent advocate filling in for her. She was unable to come today.
Very good. Let me just say this. After this, Dr. Oliphant, and then Ms. Webster. So please, introduce yourself for the tape again.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Susan Montgomery. I'm filling in for another parent advocate, my friend Idol, who wanted to testify about her son, Abdullahi. We have a lot in common. I've actually testified a lot recently, reached out to many House and Senate members, past and present, attempted to communicate with folks on related ed policies, concerns about amendments for bills regarding education funding, procedures, school safety, licensing, unfair discipline, school pushout, summative ratings, special education funding, disparities, and bias in our school systems. My son, Tay, has been in 17 schools or related programs, which equates to 5 districts in the state, and he is only in 8th grade. Although he is at his current school the longest ever and actually doing well, it has had its own trials and tribulations. We are currently taking him out of district to get his educational needs met, which is not always easy or affordable, especially when my family lacks support and transportation. He has been abused by staff, cops, and students while attending these schools, as well as services being neglected and compensatory education being ignored. I'm not anti-public school, rather, for more professional staff training and development, diversity, inclusion, and better measures to follow the Safe and Supportive Schools Act. I also wish for schools to communicate better with students and their families to make sure all students are safe, happy, and successful. There is a huge lack of transparency and consistency for our youth in these schools. I do not have the same great experiences as other families do. Many students like my son, which identify black, other students of color, free and reduced lunch, English language learners, and kids with IEPs, also kids who have mental health or face trauma, face harassment and discrimination at very high and disturbing rates. Please listen to our student voices and their parents when making decisions around education. We know our kids best, and we sacrifice much. Everything matters to us. We need our students to matter. Brown, black, and indigenous students and staff matter. We need more people that look like my son to best fit all students' needs. Please contact me for questions or concerns later. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Montgomery. Dr. Oliphant, followed by Ms. Webster, and then Ms. Howard. Dr. Oliphant, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of committee. I'm here this morning. My name is Jennifer Oliphant. I'm from the University of Minnesota's Prevention Research Center, where I'm a research associate. I'm here this morning to discuss the research and support the research behind the comprehensive sexual health education material that is in this bill. I want to call your attention to 3 points that were given to you within your materials. This is a research brief supported and written by the University of Minnesota's Prevention Research Center. 3 areas are particularly important with this. First, I want everyone to recognize on the committee that parents from all parts of Minnesota support comprehensive sexual education for their children. And in your brief, you can see the districts where and the level of support. This support exceeds over 80% in every district. Secondly, comprehensive sexual health education teaches consent and healthy relationships. We have decades of experience and research to point out that comprehensive sexual education works, and it works in these areas as well. And finally, comprehensive sexual education, with those decades of research, changes to the lives of young people. They do learn how to negotiate sexual relationships in a more comprehensive manner. They know how to talk to their partners, and in the end, they come out with a more comprehensive way to interact with peers and a healthier community for us all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Oliphant. Ms. Webster, followed by Ms. Howard, followed by Dr. Spies. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and committee members. My name is Wendy Webster, and I serve as the Director of Community Services and Communications for St. Anthony Brighton School District. In the St. Anthony Wrighton School District, we serve 95 children ages 3, 4, and 5 in our preschool classrooms. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Community Education Association to address a provision in Article 8 regarding preschool student dismissal. Thank you to Representative Richardson for meeting with us recently to discuss this provision. While we support the intent to ensure children of color and children with disabilities are not systemically dismissed from preschool, we ask that you consider amending this proposal. Such dismissals should be exceedingly rare, and all preschool programs should go above and beyond to support the individual needs of children. A foundational element of early learning focuses on the social and emotional development of children. Consequently, preschool focuses on developing the student's sense of self, getting along with peers, building confidence and independence. Inhibiting a child's growth by removing the student at the preschool level would be counterproductive to our mission to prepare all students for kindergarten. A child's removal from preschool should be limited to extreme circumstances and applied to any program providing a preschool experience for our students. We also believe some flexibility for programs is appropriate. A temporary removal, for example, would provide staff and families with time necessary to research alternative accommodations that would support the continued growth of a student. Again, we believe that dismissals should be exceedingly rare, but some flexibility for programs is warranted. We hope that you will consider adding language to the bill to address our concerns, and we thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Webster. Ms. Howard? Following this, Dr. Spies, and then Ms. Hernandez. Ms. Howard, welcome.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. Happy Tuesday. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Patrice Howard. I'm the Executive Director of Community Education for Minneapolis Public Schools, previously the Director of Community Schools at Brooklyn Center. As you may know or be aware, Brooklyn Center Community Schools is the state's first full-service community schools district. They began implementing this model in 2009 and have produced positive results ever since, including increased graduation and attendance rates, on-site access to mental health and medical supports, family engagement practices such as increased food support for families and leadership opportunities, as well as enrichment programs for all youth. By welcoming community members as partners in school involvement and decision-making, we are better able to reduce access to barriers by responding to the achievement and opportunity gaps through co-located, integrated, and coordinated services of delivery that support student success. The full-service community schools model is a proven model of success with over 5 decades of research. Now that I'm in Minneapolis Public Schools, I am very much looking forward to supporting the district in the work of full-service community schools, which is why myself, colleagues, and supporters would like to thank you for considering increased funding for full-service community schools, a model that supports schools, community, and most importantly, youth and families. As a member of our state's coalition, I can tell you firsthand that there are a number of schools and community-based organizations that are eager to support and to expand this work across the state and communities. I encourage you to visit Minneapolis Public Schools or one of our partners that are delivering this work. Thank you once again.
Thank you, Ms. Howard. Dr. Spies, followed by Ms. Hernandez, and then Mr. DeGree. Dr. Spies, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Paul Spies with the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. Is this bottle half full or half empty? Both are true and need to be acknowledged. This bill will do much to address systemic factors that are barriers to more people of color and American Indians pursuing teaching as a career and remaining in the profession. It is historic legislation that will strengthen programs and increase accountability, building upon work of previous sessions under the leadership of both parties. We thank you for significant investments in key programs, including extra base in fiscal 22 and later, because the shortage will remain severe for many years to come. The support and leadership this session of Policy Chair Joachim and Finance Chair Dabney is especially appreciated, along with HF 824, Increased Teachers of Color Act lead author, Representative Kunish Bodine, and the dozens of co-authors from both parties. We thank the many organizations, especially the state ethnic councils led by MCLA, that helped vet draft language starting this past summer, and nearly 50 organizations that have endorsed the act. The coalition formed 3.5 years ago with 40 people from competing systems and institutions feeling a sense of urgency for systemic change. Our naive goal in 2016 was to double the teachers in color from 4% to 8% by 2020. Now the coalition, which is led by a majority of people of color, is nearly 1,300 people strong, and we've had to adjust our near-term goal. We propose comprehensive legislation to move the needle just 4% to 5% teachers of color in the biennium. Unfortunately, this bill won't do that in the near term. So the key question we want asked for any decision about this issue with tough choices remaining this session is, what has the most direct positive impact that will get us closer to moving the needle? We asked to be consulted to help answer this question during the difficult negotiating decisions that lie ahead. Thank you for your leadership. Please stay strong on this crucial issue for narrowing opportunity and achievement gaps during conference committee.
Thank you, Dr. Spies. Ms. Hernandez? And then we have someone after Ms. Hernandez, someone from Mincasa, and then Ms. Keller from Think Small. Ms. Hernandez, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Violeta Hernandez Espinosa, and I'm Education Legislative Director for the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. Before I provide comments about this bill on behalf of the State Ethnic Councils and Indian Affairs Council, I'd like to personally ask everyone in this room to reflect on the voices heard and not heard, in which racial and ethnic communities in our diverse state are present and not present among committee members, lobbyists, and general members of the interested public as decisions are deliberated in this process. With these reflections in mind, it is refreshing to see a budget and policies that move us closer to including more of the priorities from our constituent communities. This bill gets us closer to understanding racial equity in education, but there is still much work to do. The councils express gratitude for the comprehensive approach adopted from the Increased Teachers of Color Act to attract, prepare, and retain racially and ethnically diverse teachers. However, it is important to note that this bill does not include our top funding priority to directly support candidates to complete preparation programs through scholarships and student teaching grants. Thankfully, this bill includes our top policy priority to address opportunity gaps for K-12 students and families by setting expectations for more inclusive and respectful school climate and curriculum, ensuring that school climate and curriculum reflects and respects diverse communities is critical for the retention of diverse educators, as well as the engagement of students, their parents, and other school staff. We appreciate the support and leadership from Representative Kunesh Padin and both chairs to hear and adopt most of our recommendations, as well as appreciate the dozens of co-authors from both parties that supported HF824 to this point. Finally, we advise that you please remain strong and advocate for the comprehensive approach and funding levels you have in this bill to diversify the teacher workforce as you go into conference committee negotiations. And we look forward to working with you and assisting with you on that process.
Thank you, Ms. Hernandez. Mincasa, followed by Ms. Keller, and then Ms. Salo. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Adriana Perez, the Prevention Program Coordinator at the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Prior to my role at Mincasa, I was an advocate for victims and survivors of sexual abuse, intimate partner violence, and family violence. Mincasa is a statewide coalition of over 75 member programs, allies, and survivors. Mincasa is here today to support House File 2020 and to thank Representative Lippert, co-authors, and this committee for advancing this conversation. The Center for Disease Control defines teaching skills such as consent, healthy relationships, healthy sexuality, and empowerment as a best practice for sexual violence prevention. Mincasa currently funds 6 programs across the state to do sexual violence prevention work. All of these programs focus on educating youth about healthy relationships, consent, and prevention of sexual violence within their own communities. 2 of our grantees utilize safe dates and evidence-based sexual violence prevention curriculum, and I would like to share some of the data we have. 1 out of 3 dating 7th and 8th grade students surveyed have experienced physical dating violence, and almost 2 out of 3 have experienced psychological dating abuse. 1 out of 8 7th and 8th grade students in school surveyed have perpetrated physical dating violence, and 1 out of 3 have perpetrated psychological dating violence. 8 to 12 months after receiving this curriculum, students reported that they had an increase in using healthy anger conflict response techniques and decrease in using unhealthy anger and conflict response techniques, and a significant increase in awareness of services available for both victims and perpetrators of abuse and violent dating relationships. A vast majority of surveyed students said they believed that their response to anger was uncontrollable. These few statistics start to paint a clear picture of what youth are currently experiencing and why prevention education, such as comprehensive sex education, is needed. Topics such as healthy relationships, communication skills, consent, and setting and respecting boundaries are all part of a comprehensive sex education. These topics help youth develop practical skills so they can make best choices for themselves. This empowers youth to create healthy relationships that uphold their values and boundaries and teach them how to respect other people's boundaries. It is also important to note that these skills go beyond dating relationships. The more we develop all of these relationship-based skills, the healthier all of our relationships will be throughout our life, our friendships, our family relationships, and even with our colleagues. Providing comprehensive sex education within schools is the most efficient and effective way to reach Minnesota youth. Statewide healthy relationship and sex education allows youth to receive consistent messages around and knowledge of healthy relationship skills. Comprehensive sex education will provide youth with these necessary tools for safe, healthy, consenting relationships of all kind. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Keller, followed by Ms. Salo, followed by Dr. Elhai.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cisa Keller. I'm the Senior Vice President of Early Childhood Quality Development at Think Small. Our mission is to advance quality care and education of children in their crucial early years. I'm here today to offer support for several of the early childhood elements of House File 2400, which we believe is a strong tool to help prepare children for kindergarten. Think Small is committed to policies and practices that empower a just, inclusive, and equitable care and education system for our youngest children. We know that Minnesota's achievement gaps are rooted in opportunity gaps and began as early as 18 months. By investing in children early, we can close these gaps. With this in mind, we are very supportive of the expansion of early learning scholarships. However, we do have some concerns about the annual cap on the individual early learning scholarships remaining at $7,500. Because infants and toddler care is even more expensive on average than preschool care, we believe that the current cap would hinder a successful rollout of prioritizing early learning scholarships for our youngest learners. Our experience as an early learning scholarship administrator tells us that families who are most in need and with younger children are put in a position of having to pull out of care during the middle of the school year because their scholarship has run out. This is not helping prepare them for kindergarten, and the disruption is not good for kids or for families. Please consider making sure that this cap is addressed. Finally, we support the proposed effort to better coordinate early learning scholarships and child care assistance program to better serve eligible families. Thank you very much for your time, for your efforts, and supporting the youngest learners, and we look forward to continuing to work with you.
Thank you, Ms. Keller. Ms. Salo, followed by Dr. Elhai, followed by Brandjord? Sorry. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Daphne and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of the Minnesota School Counselors Association in support of House File 2400. My name is Jill Salo. I'm a licensed professional school counselor at St. Francis High School. I've been employed at this school since 2002. 2 weeks ago, we mourned the loss of a beautiful life who died by suicide. We had hundreds of grieving students and staff members emotionally distraught, and in need of immediate support. I'll never forget the sound of an estimated 200 students upset. 4 days later, we lost a former student who had just graduated. Because of the cuts we sustained, the school counseling department, it's been more difficult to meet the needs of our student body during crisis. We are normally very busy without a crisis. This year we are less one full-time school counselor and one dual-licensed mental and chemical health counselor that we had last year. The results of this loss includes it takes longer for students to be seen. Proactive programming is being dropped. Communication with families is more delayed due to the high volume of need occurring with mental health. Crisis management is at a high, with reactive work becoming the primary focus, because it has to be. And then mental health needs are rising. I'm personally responsible for the academic career and personal short-term counseling needs for over 450 students and their parents. At our middle school, the typical caseload is approximately 630 students and their parents for every school counselor. I can't empathize how important it is that our schools are fully staffed with student support services that provide whole student support by working with school counselors, school nurses, social workers, psychologists, and chemical dependency counselors. We would like to thank Chair Dabney and Representative Hewitt and members of this committee for investing the $10 million in the upcoming biennium for Support Our Students grants to allow school districts to hire additional support staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fallow. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and committee members. My name is Dr. Karen Elhai. I'm a pediatrician with Health Partners and chair of the board of directors of Reach Out and Read Minnesota. I'm here to thank you for inclusion and funding consideration, with special thanks to some of the authors that serve on this committee, Representatives Joachim, Erickson, Cotiza Watoon, and Murphy. Reach Out and Read is an evidence-based national program that utilizes the trusted relationship between a primary care provider and parents to educate them on the importance of reading to their child and sharing books beginning in infancy. I have been using Reach Out and Read in my practice for over 22 years and believe it to be as vital a component of child health as growth curves and immunizations. We currently reach over 1 in 3 children in Minnesota through 260 participating clinics in over half of Minnesota counties. We work directly with clinics to train providers, help establish literacy-rich clinic environments, assist in book selection and procurement, and ensure the quality of the program through regular site visits and metrics. Recently, Minneapolis achieved bookend city status following Fairmont and Northfield, where 100% of clinics participate, making it the largest city in the nation to earn this distinction. We also are one of only 5 states selected for an early math pilot, training providers at 3 Twin Cities area locations in using the model to teach foundational math skills through families reading together. Over 90% of children will see a medical provider at least once in their first year. So this simple intervention has the ability to reach children in what we know to be the critical first 3 years of brain development. We have succeeded thus far through some wonderful community partnerships. However, we have reached the point that further expansion would risk compromising quality unless we have further organizational growth. Funding from the state will certainly give us necessary resources to sustain and expand clinic participation, but also signal to other organizations that Reach Out and Read Minnesota is a worthy investment and ready for the next level of presence throughout the state. Thank you again for your support of Reach Out and Read in the effort to address health and education gaps in Minnesota.
Thank you, Dr. Elhai. Last 3, Chris Brandrud, Mikasha Nelson, and then Ms. Adverholden. Oh, yes. And then we'll have some cleanup to do. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Chris Brandjord. I am a special education paraeducator in the Monticello School District and a union steward for Local 284. I grew up on a dairy farm in central Minnesota, and when I was 13, my parents had my brother who has Down syndrome. I learned a lot from him. I learned every kid is important, and even kids that have lots of challenges can do and overcome those challenges every day. So when my own kids were old enough to be busy with their school activities, friends suggested I work at the school as a paraeducator. And that journey started 13 years ago, and here I am today. At Monticello, we say every kid, every day. This is our mission statement. It means working hard all the time to provide an excellent education for each one of our students. That mission was made harder when the special education formula was changed, resulting in significantly less funding for Monticello schools in 2017. We have fewer supplies, fewer people, and less time to spend with each student. When you don't have the tools you need, it creates an unsafe situation for students and staff. Paraeducators don't do this work to get rich, but we do rely on our jobs for health care, to take care of our own kids, and provide for their needs. The change in this bill will help Monticello kids and all the adults who care for them each and every day. Thank you for the special education funding changes that increase our base funding and provide an ongoing grant for Monticello schools. Again, thank you for giving me the time to speak today.
Thank you. Ms. Nation, followed by Ms. Abderholden, and then we will hear from Ms. Mitchell. Ms. Nation, welcome.
Welcome. Good morning, Chair Dabney, members and guests. Thank you for the opportunity to testify regarding House File 2400. My name is Makisha Nation, and I'm the Executive Director for Teach for America Twin Cities. Thank you, Chair Dabney, and members of the Education Policy and the Education Finance Division for your tremendous work in creating this omnibus bill. It is an incredible investment ensuring that all Minnesota students have access to equitable and excellent education. Teach for America was founded in 1990 with the mission to recruit and develop diverse teachers from outstanding college graduates and professionals to make an initial two-year commitment to education and to become lifelong leaders and advocates for children in an effort to end education inequity. Teach for America is often one of the most studied teacher preparation and leadership development programs in the country, and as I referenced in my full testimony, there are a number of commission studies to this regard that have often found Teach for America teachers excelling in the classroom and making sure that our students are growing at levels ahead of what teachers that were prepared in other programs. There's also been independent studies of principals and principal ratings that show that 95% of principals show that their teachers are making a positive impact on their schools. Additionally, recent studies in Tennessee and Texas noted the rigorous nature and effectiveness of TFA's preparation programs in supporting student growth and learning. Teach for America has been operating in Minnesota since 2009 as a nonprofit and a proud member of the AmeriCorps Service Network. In Minnesota, 35% of our 32 first and second year teachers are teachers of color, compared to only 4% in Minnesota. Additionally, close to half of our teachers come from low-income backgrounds. Our core members are teaching in K-12 environments, with 38% of our teachers teaching in high-need STEM subject areas. We are working closely with 14 partner schools across the Twin Cities, and our core members are impacting 2,300 students annually. There are over 750 Teach for America alumni in the Twin Cities. 86% of our alumni are currently working in fields that impact low-income communities, with over 475 working in education, including 17 principals. We believe that supporting many rigorous pathways to the classroom is really important, and our current licensure system allows for multiple access points to the classroom for diverse and talented teachers, including Teach for America's new and experienced teachers. We have several concerns with the new teacher licensure system changes in the omnibus bill. We believe it will revert Minnesota back to an old licensure system, and that has been described by the auditor as unclear, undefined, and broken in his extensive 2016 report. First, the restrictions placed on Tier 2 teachers will significantly limit our out-of-state candidates from obtaining a Minnesota license who can demonstrate pedagogy and knowledge and qualifications listed in the current statute. Many of these experienced educators are recruited to the state each year, and this pathway is really important for them as they work to complete the requirements for Tier 3 and Tier 4 license.
Ms. Nation, if you could wrap up, please.
Sure. Secondly, we believe that our schools and districts would be placed in unfair limiting environment by trying to focus on Tier 1 and Tier 2 limits. Our program data shows that new teachers that qualify for Tier 2 licensure are effective, and to unfairly limit the school's decision-making power and how they staff their classroom is of great concern to us. We also believe that the diversity of teachers is important, and as Tier 1 and Tier 2 licensures, teachers of color represent a significant amount of Tier 1 and Tier 2 licensures compared to Tier 3 and Tier 4, we want to make sure that this does not impact the ability of our teachers to be in front of diverse students. Finally, schools and districts we partner with closely serve Minnesota's most marginalized students, and they continue to experience extreme shortages in high-need subject areas. We believe the current licensure system gives them the scope and the decision-making on how to staff their classrooms the way they know best. We believe these new provisions would significantly harm their ability to recruit and retain high-quality educators. I know this committee is deeply concerned about Minnesota's achievement gap, and I know it's critical that we make meaningful progress for teacher diversity and licensure. We are excited by the many investments this bill makes to increase access to the teaching profession, as well as increase teacher diversity. However, as a community, we're often debating the pathways.
Ms. Nation, please.
We're often debating the pathways when, in fact, our conversation should be centering on student learning, teacher quality, and impact. As a member of this community, I want students pursuing a path for their academic career and leadership success, and I want my boys to grow up in a community that invests the resources in every teacher to reach the full potential of their students.
Thank you, Ms. Nation.
Thank you so much.
Ms. Abderholden. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. I'm just going to bullet through some of the issues. We appreciate actually trying to create some stability for kids who are homeless to stay in their home school at a time when everything is so disrupted to them. We also appreciate the students in foster care remaining in their home district. Not only do they lose their family, but they lose the adult connections and their friends at the same time. So we think that's really important. I'd like to have you think about the Pupil Transportation Working Group, that you add transportation to care and treatment as an issue to be addressed there, because it is a huge issue with schools. We support the efforts to identify students with dyslexia early. This can lead, if you're struggling in school, it can lead to struggling with your self-esteem, mental health, anxiety, aggression, and things like that. We strongly support the non-exclusionary disciplinary policies. Removing a child, especially a young child, without teaching them skills really doesn't do anything. We also support requiring additional training of paraprofessionals. We support the changes made to the mental health education law. I will note that in the bill, it refers to national mental health advocates. I think you actually mean state mental health advocates, and we actually did that work this week. So it didn't take very long to figure out what kinds of programs were out there for schools. We're pleased to see the addition of social-emotional learning restorative practices to the activities that can be funded by the Safe School Levy. We strongly support the additional funding for Level 4 programs in the intermediate districts and other special ed co-ops and other districts. We do think this is a critically important program to address the needs of kids who have very complex needs. We support the funding for the Support Our Students Grant and for the Trauma-Informed Schools Incentive Aid. We think that's very important. And we support funding the position of the Second Chance Agency Director. At first, when I came into the hearing, we were disappointed that you didn't not have the funding for the online suicide prevention training for all teachers, but the Health and Human Services spreadsheet was revealed during this meeting, and it's in there. So, thank you.
Go us. Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Going back up the list, Ms. Mitchell and Ms. Tardy. Are you Ms. Mitchell
or
Ms. Tardy?
I am. Right here.
Thank you. My apologies.
I'm
got
not
distracted.
Late this time.
All right. Very good. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair, members. My name is Shannon Mitchell. I'm the Managing Director at Educators for Excellence. We're a teacher-led nonprofit with roughly 2,000 members. Our members vote on which issues are top of mind for them each year, and year after year, addressing racial disparities in discipline is at the top of that list. It is no surprise, as Minnesota is home to some of the worst racial disparities in discipline. We know that suspensions and expulsions are not effective at changing student behavior or improving learning environments, and teachers are really hungry for alternatives and are leading change in a lot of their buildings. There's a lot that state-level policymakers can do as well, though, and so we are excited to see some specific provisions in this omnibus bill and want to thank both chairs for that. Specifically, we are supportive of the pre-kindergarten suspension and expulsion ban on line 214.4. We think this is critical. I think most people are surprised to hear that preschoolers are roughly three times more likely than K-12 students to be suspended or expelled. So we think this will have a lot of impact. We think this also pairs nicely with districts really embracing and investing in alternatives to exclusionary discipline. Moving on, we're also very supportive of the policy provisions on line 51.26 that require the use of non-exclusionary discipline practices in the K-12 system prior to dismissal when there isn't a threat posed. We think that's very important. And then lastly, while we need to limit the use of suspensions, we also need to make investments in alternatives. And so it's promising to see the Trauma-Informed Schools Grant on line 192.31. And then just lastly, want to express concern for the licensure provisions. We oppose them. We think it's too soon to make sweeping changes to a new system. Thank you, members and the chair.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. Ms. Tardy. Does your daughter want to come up and sit at the table as well? Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. I want to say thank you to the committee for From the North Side Achievement Program. I'm a mother, and she's a scholar, and she wanted to also say thank you for your funding. It spread a lot of love on the North Side, and we appreciate you guys.
Very good. Do you have anything you want to say, scholar?
I want to say thank you. I like her.
All right.
For all, for helping the NAS community. For helping them to stay up.
Okay. Thank you both very much.
You have a blessed
day. You as well, ma'am. That exhausts the list of people who had contacted Ms. Burt previously. Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to testify regarding the bill? Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did contact the committee administrator. We didn't know if we'd get to me.
My apologies.
But you did. Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Joel Carlson. I have a government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here in front of you on behalf of the community of Minnesota Resorts, and I will speak because they're not in the room, but I've talked with them on behalf of Hospitality Minnesota, the Grocers Association, the State Fair, and others in the hospitality industry. I can put an exclamation point on my problem in 1 minute. Article 1, Section 37, we have had a continual issue with repealing the post-Labor Day requirement. It's in this bill, and we've testified in policy committee on this in strong opposition, as Representative Joachim knows. But what we asked you then is that you consider and balance all of the interests of the state. You have a $900 million bill, some 245 pages, and there are a lot of winners in this bill. But there's one loser, and that's my clients. The resort industry, parents overwhelmingly support post-Labor Day start. Minneapolis just went through a survey. They had over 11,000 parents respond, and 85% wanted to start school after Labor Day. So parents lose on this. Your constituents lose. I can tell you that the University of Minnesota says that parents will book trips. They're 50% more likely to book a trip when school starts after Labor Day, and we've reported from our own resort experience that we lose 40% of our bookings in August when school starts before Labor Day. That is the stark economic reality for the people that I represent. And your constituents will lose because that is how people access our lakes. Not everyone can afford a lake home. They get there through resorts. And when they're gone, there's no way for people to get on our great natural resources. So we ask that you remove that provision from the bill. It is very detrimental to the rural economy, to the grocery stores and the bait shop and everyone that depends on tourism in greater Minnesota. We ask you to remove that provision from this bill. It is very detrimental. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Is there anyone else in the audience wishing to testify regarding House File 2400 and the Delete Everything Amendment? Seeing none, a reminder to members that the deadline for submission of amendments, proposed amendments for House File 2400 is this afternoon at 5 p.m. The committee will not be meeting tomorrow, but will be meeting on Thursday in order to mark up the bill. That concludes public testimony, I'm told to say. Representative Kresha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the members and all the work. Just a couple closing comments as we go into amendments and we go into the schedule for the week. And I'm not going to do any back and forth on questions, but I did just want to kind of paraphrase and contextualize how I see this bill and some of the things we've talked about. So I appreciate the robustness. I appreciate the aggressive nature. I think it's still in an aspirational mode. In order for this bill to become law, it is dependent upon a $400 million shift of transportation money. And while we shouldn't be talking about those shifts in this committee because it's in the purview of the Ed Finance, it is important to realize that we have to structurally balance what we're going to do. And being on in the minority side, it's our job to raise objections, to look at it, to question some of the things that are done here. And I believe getting to goodness of that can handle both sides pushing and pulling, and it's a malleable process. However, the laws of financial physics for the capital suggest that this cannot become a budget reality. I hope it does, and I hope that you can get to those targets. However, to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, I think the most difficult task you will have now is to temper the optimism and expectations that have been created. And I hope that the folks that fall on the cutting room floor are as understanding and optimistic as we heard today when they have to be let down gently. I still think we can get to a good number, and I think, Mr. Chair, you've had some great testimony and some great work, and I think we are going to have a solid education budget. I'm a little concerned that we've set these aspirational modes so high and said yes to so many people that when they come into the summer, they have to look at disappointment. So I realize that's the way this place works. I think we're setting the aspirational mode too high and not gauging the reality, but I hope we get there, and I look forward to working through the process.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Appreciate the comments and the shared desire to work through the process. Any other member comments or questions? With that, a reminder, deadline for amendments, 5 p.m. this afternoon. Please get your requests, if you haven't already, to nonpartisan staff as early as possible. They've had a long week. They may have had a long session, and we need to be gentle. Representative.
Thank you. And just one question. So I just want to make sure on the amendments, and you've been very good with the amendments, but we have a deadline. One thing I would ask is, you know, we always have changing things. If something does come up, just let us know so we can work with something. Mm-hmm. I know the nature of the place. You mentioned staff. They work very hard, and things come up, and we're willing to work with you on that.
Thank you very much, Representative Kreisha. And again, to clarify, amendments to Ms. Burt by 5 p.m. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you all very much.